Welcome back to Your Daily Dose. It's me, Nick. As a Canadian, I've never gotten to serve on a jury. I've gotten requested, or whatever they call it, the call. I've gotten summoned, but I sent it back and said, hey, I can't do this. I'm from Canada. I said it that way. So when it comes to the American citizenly activities that I am unable to partake in, like jury duty and voting, I live vicariously through Bob. Enjoy.
I've had some very interesting audiences this week. I mean, a judge and lawyers as an audience, which was not fun. And I mean, just not. But I literally went from Seminole County Courthouse, spending all day there, to driving to SAC Comedy Lab to have the grad show for my level one students. It was the greatest emotional whiplash I've had in a long time.
So, okay, so going back a step, you weren't doing some sort of presentation or work with a judge and lawyers. You were actually
I was juror number whatever. I was being interviewed, potential juror number 111, actually, in this particular instance. And yeah, so I was summoned. I went to the courthouse at 8 o'clock as instructed, hung around for about an hour, hour and a half in the jury waiting room, and then I was called up to courtroom 5A. And there was a judge behind the bench, and or at the bench, on the bench.
Did you dress up?
No. Okay. No, no. I mean, I wore what you're looking at right now without that logo on the shirt. And so I came in all black. And I did not look out of place in the group. There were a couple people that looked a little overly dressed up. They make a point of telling you that they'd like you to dress professionally, but extremes are not acceptable.
Okay.
So, like, you know, so if I show up in a tux and tails, you know, not acceptable. If I show up
and naked, there might be a way to get out of it.
Hey, I'm just saying, there are a million ways to get out of it. I watched the people that joined me in that courtroom almost to a person try to offer some reason why they were not going to be able to be in this trial, because the trial was going to take all week. It was a horrible murder trial.
Oh.
Murder, rape, stabbing, burglary. 1986. Cool case.
Oh.
Cool case.
Wow.
Okay. And so you have two attorneys on behalf of the defendant and the defendant sitting there. And you have two attorneys on behalf of the state there, and we're all seated in specific spots around the room so they keep track of us and make notes about who we are and deciding whether or not we are going to be kept or let go. And there's the process, I'll look it up, but it means true voice or truth or speak the truth. And they ask you whatever questions they want, and they have a little bit of information on you, and then they want to know more. They were particularly interested actually with the fact that I had a podcast. I think that made me unattractive to both as well. So it was an interesting experience.
You're welcome.
Thank you, pal. Hey, well, here are some of the questions. They give you
Did you take that as an opportunity to promote it and say, hey, you guys, you should listen to it. It's called Your Daily Dose with Bob and Nick.
Nick's something
super great.
I wish I had.
Yeah.
When they asked me what book I read last, I told them The World About Surrender by Bono. You know, and I said to everybody in the jury box, you should all check it out, the audiobook in particular. And one's like, well, we shouldn't read it. And I'm like, well, he reads it and he's really funny and he does voices and he has music in the background. It's just a really good listen. You know, and I could see the attorneys like, we're losing control of this room Which I think also makes them nervous.
Oh, like, they would not want
they, you. They don't want someone in there who's charismatic enough to get the other people doing things. And so there was that. But other questions. Last book you read, CSI or Law and Order? What's your answer to that? If you had to choose between
a weird question.
CSI or Law and Order, what do you choose?
Law and Order, I guess.
Look, I chose Law and Order. Yeah. And there were a lot of CSIs in the room. And this trial was going to involve a bit of CSI, okay? Because,
oh, I see.
Because 1986, they're going to have to be using DNA. They're going to have to be using
stuff, yeah.
And there's going to be photographic issues. I mean, it was like, I'm really glad that I didn't get on this jury. Other question that they asked, on a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being most liberal, 10 liberal, 10 being most conservative, where are you on the scale?
Ooh.
I said 1, because that's where I felt. And a man across the room in a God is Living Through Jesus t-shirt said that he was a 10. We were both let go from that jury. And number 1 and number 10 held hands and skipped down the hallway when that happened. There was a real unifying factor in getting out of jury duty. If you want to break down the partisan walls. Just get them out of jury duty together.
Common, I don't want to say common enemy, but common bureaucracy.
Oh, it was something. It was. And here's the weird part. I never felt so alone in a group of people as when I was with those jury peers. Like people were actively trying not to connect with each other, which is weird for me. But it was a strange experience to see that and to feel that. And I also, people, they were a little jerky. Like the defending attorney asked about military history and people's families. And my grandfather was in the Army, and he was an airplane mechanic in the Army, if you can figure that out. And my father was in the Coast Guard. And this guy says, oh, Coast Guard, yeah, well, I'm a Navy man. I'm thinking, you know, he's trying to relate to me. And then he says, yeah, and, you know, if you're not tall enough to get in the Navy, you usually go in the Coast Guard. And I said, you're not earning any points here. And he turns around and looks back at the judge and then looks back at me. And that's when I knew he's going to give me a black mark.
Yeah.
I also got an argument with the prosecutor. But it wasn't an argument. It was just they were trying to make me be definitive when I refused to be definitive. I'm like, no, I don't believe that I can make that choice. You know. And then she says, well, if a pilot gets on the intercom and says, hey, we're going to San Francisco, I feel pretty sure that we're going to get you there. Well, how would you feel about that? You know, would anyone have a problem with that in the room? And everyone raised their hand to have a problem. And I'm like, I think he's the most honest pilot that you've ever heard. Because no pilot in there really knows for sure that they're going to get to that destination. I appreciate his hopefulness and I appreciate his honesty. And then she says, well, let me give you a different example.
Oh, boy.
Your wife is going on a trip and she says to you, I believe that I can be faithful during this whole trip.
Jiminy Christmas.
Right. Now, how am I not offended by this? And I said, actually, that's not really comparable because my wife has a lot more control over her fidelity than a pilot has over the weather or other planes in the air or gravity. So I feel like my wife, I could feel even more confident in her holding true to that than the pilot. And she's like,
I can't get this one person.
Scoffs. Well,
what
the thing is this.
Happening?
Why did they even want, after a couple of things that I said, why did they even want me? And I wasn't actively trying to get out of jury duty. I really wasn't. But I was drawing hard lines where they probably weren't necessarily that hard.
I wonder if they were just, they want people who are going to commit to one answer or the other.
They want somebody who's changeable. Both of those sets of attorneys believe that they have the power to sway people's opinions. Certain people's opinions. People who aren't too extreme, people who aren't too set in their minds, people who aren't going to overanalyze what they're saying, and people who haven't already prejudged the situation. A lot of the questions were about that. Well, would your experience with this affect your ability to judge this objectively? And in most cases, everyone said no, or yes, I can judge it objectively. You know, it's just, but it was oddly rote. The process didn't feel as human as I expected it to feel. The judge was super nice and very thorough. And if anybody had to go to the bathroom during this whole process, we all sat and waited. That was like...
Oh, nothing could happen while the person
nothing.
Was going to the
bathroom? So what happens is... And then what happens is one person gets up and goes to the bathroom. Then 5 minutes into that, someone else is like, I'm not going to be the person to wait. I got to go. So they get up. So we get cascading people leaving the room. Takes 20 minutes basically. Then everyone's back in the room and they say, well, we're going to take a lunch break.
But why is it important for you to be there while somebody else is being questioned?
You have to hear all of the answers to everything, apparently.
Yeah. As a juror?
Yeah, I guess. And they also ask you, like, two people knew each other and they were concerned that them knowing each other would affect their ability to judge things objectively. I appreciate the rigor of the process.
Mm-hmm.
I want them to be thorough and I want good people to be on the jury. I feel like I'm a good person, but I don't know that I'll ever be on a jury again. And by that I mean, I hope not. While I think I have pretty good judgment, I really don't want to judge the innocence or guilt of another human being. I'm grateful that there are others who are willing to take on that important task. By the way, the term I was struggling to remember is voir dire, which means speak the truth. It felt more like a game of Justice Jeopardy, where if you answer the questions right, you get an all-expense-paid trial and a front-row seat in a jury box. To which I say, no thank you, Judge Ken Jennings. That does it for this episode of Your Daily Dose. We'll catch you next time.